So what I thought, actually, I was just looking at my notes last night after having been very inspired, looking at the citizenry around us and all that. And all thoughts, when Andrea asked a question this morning, all thoughts of my observations on the citizenship issue went away, so which is why I was a bit silent. But I thought, I looked at the notes, and these are some of the things that came out as I heard them, right? Global citizen. Is citizenship a category that we have received, or is it fluid? National boundaries do not necessarily define citizenship. The digital age reconfigures the space for negotiating gender, but not always in a way that obtains women citizenship. What is free and open is not necessarily emancipatory. Women members encourage to learn about and set up their own blogs. Women's online participation equals transformation of citizenship. Does access to ICT necessarily add up to feminist content becoming important? So, I think I've only picked up a few things because sometimes it went too fast, and I am the member of the Sri Lanka team probably who is least literate on ICTs and really seriously depend on, it seems, the younger generation to advise me and clear things for me, because it is a very challenging thing for me. I mean, so because of the conversation was very rich, and so these are some of the things that I picked up. So there's a range, these little comments indicate the anticipation of positive change, as well as caution and anxiety that it may not necessarily roll out in that way. And to position where we are coming from, ICTs by themselves as a means of communication, I think ICTs themselves are constructed precisely through and for social interaction between persons, women or men, children or adults, those in or out of heterosexual, transgendered, same-sex partnerships, whether these people are single mothers or single fathers, whether they live in the developed, less developed countries, whether the political regime in a country is oppressive or liberal. In the ideal digital age, we do not need to spend time critically examining who it is that is IT literate, who is marginalized, who has access, who doesn't. Because in this ideal world, computer literacy or internet access, technical skills will be available to all and will allow for the flourishing of interaction across geographical boundaries and socioeconomic differences. So there is the ideal that we see in front of us. However, as we have been deliberating here and elsewhere, that ideal digital world is still to fully materialize in this way. Whether it ever will or not is still in the balance. The storylines from films such as The Terminator 1, 2, or 3, I watched it last night. I had to give up watching it last night because of this. But the storylines, the discussions on biometrics that we had with Kalyan yesterday, the security measures, the fingerprinting, retina scanning, that are now being mainstreamed, whether within a country or when crossing geographical or politically defined boundaries, clearly indicate that access to economic resources, political power, and military control are also very much part of the baggage of ICTs, defining the arena of who actually will have access or not, and what it will be used for. In the context of Sri Lanka, variously labeled as developing, less developed, etc., with high literacy rates for both women and men, and relatively high social development indicators, redefining women's citizenship through new media, increased visibility of women in the public sphere, in decision-making structures, should be apparent, given that background that we have, but it is not significantly so. A gendered lens on decision-making structures shows the disparate access to political power for women and men, and women have never been even close to 10% of those elected or appointed to decision-making positions since independence in 1948. And I think I would expand a little bit on 1948, because that's when most of the countries in South Asia obtained independence within brackets from the British colonizers and became democratic states. So there in itself, I think we have the, as far as Sri Lanka is concerned, there's a hole in that democracy, because from 1940 to today, we don't have more than 6% of women in any of the decision-making structures. So we have to turn the democracy concept also on its head a bit. The representation of women in media as reporters or editors, sub-editors, and those recognized as making news is similarly significantly low. Within the debates on citizenship, these factors illustrate almost an acceptance, albeit uncomfortably, of differential and discriminatory practices in power politics that leave women in the margins of enjoying their rights as citizens. I think this, the concept of citizenship is still, I find it very, it's very absorbing, it's very fascinating, because there is the circle doesn't end, you know. I want to say that this is what citizenship is, and as I understand it, but every time I have ventured into it, I find that there is no border as such, and now we are engaged, the Women and Media Collective definitely is engaged in looking at new media in relation to the concept of citizenship, which has no borders. So again, it's something that's really, it is very fluid, but it's also very open, and we might fall off the edge, I feel like, you know, sometimes. So back to Sri Lanka, to contextualize and also to weave in our anxieties and worries and questions. Over the past, we had in Sri Lanka what the government called the E-Sri Lanka program. So over the past decade, the state policy in regard to providing digital access to its citizens has been significant. Various governments have promoted, either through its own avenues or in collaboration with other organizations, things like computer literacy in schools, opening up of telecenters, providing space, hardware, and infrastructure and access to ICTs, primarily to facilitate better skills for development. So, I mean, it's very clear that ICTs are regarded by the state as a means to development, and of course, development as defined within those parameters. The focus of government and most other institutions is couched in the terms of development. And the identities of those for whom these facilities are being offered are gender neutral. There's no clearly articulated vision that recognizes socioeconomic or cultural factors that may underlie differential access and use of ICTs by men and by women. There seems to be an acceptance that installing the hardware and providing physical space for ICT operations in itself would enable gender equality if that concept was included in those programs or at all. Gender equality in technical knowledge, and it would just materialize. Despite this, the patterns that are emerging indicate that changes are taking place at the community level, and women, especially younger women, are engaging with ICTs as individuals through using the facilities of the nanasalas, through creating their own blogs, etc. The nanasalas, to the extent that these facilities function in different parts of the country, and the availability of ICT packages in local languages, which in Sinhala and Tamil, are important elements in providing access, cutting across economic disparities within society. And here, when I say economic society, I think that's another thing that we have, I think some of us have raised this issue, because we do presume that by providing these the services, that everybody in the community, irrespective of economic socioeconomic status, will access. And of course, we all know, like there is something called the poorest of the poor in all the poverty alleviation programs. The poorest of the poor actually does not benefit from poverty alleviation, because they are too poor to even make that step. So we have to recognize that, yes, we have in the local languages it's accessible, but there are other parameters that decide whether these people actually go and use those facilities or not, even if you are literate. Anyways, we find that there are that women seem to be involved, engaging with ICTs. So while gender equality is clearly not the primary vision of providing access to ICTs by government or other institutions, it is notable that it's creating a space for women, however constrained by class or ethnic or regional locations of the individuals. While the government is pushing for better access to ICTs with the project of development, the environment of a protracted conflict and post-conflict scenario has brought to the forefront also this unease, the government's unease with unlimited, uncontrolled access to avenues such as Facebook and email, through which the government considers sentiments construed to be anti-government, non-patriotic, anti-Singhala, anti-Singhala culture is being pushed through, and mobilization can take place. And this was before Tunisia and Egypt, etc. And then I think we mentioned even in the last meeting that we had, the other side of it, bringing in Chinese technology or Iranian support or to monitor the use of new media. In 2010, the government announced it would be banning Facebook, and this was followed by numerous articles and news bits on national media and some private media, state media and private media, deliberating the negative aspects and impact of new media for the state. So that is going on the other side. Now, our focus in this project was informed by the socio-economic and political context of the war and a tsunami, which actually affected everybody in the country, and the way in which humanitarian development was taken forward with not that much focus on gender equality or women as citizens who have the right to exercise their citizenship. Now, very briefly, I mean, I think most of you here are familiar with the Sri Lankan project, which had two aspects. I think what is interesting for me after all, in the last 2.5 days, is reflecting on, we said, the media campaign on political representation of women at local government level, which was about 6 to 8 months of intense new media. So there were blogs, there were a website, there was the traditional advertisements on television, radio and newspapers, and a dialogue with prospective candidates, women who from 5 districts whom we directly worked with closely, to tell them that there is a blog and you are up there, you know, all your information is there, and every day or every few days, it would be, I suppose blogs have to be every day, new things are put in, and it's in Sinhala and Tamil, and it was in all three languages actually. And why it is that women and media felt at the end of it that it didn't have the impact that we had hoped for. And so then it brings to me, the question that, okay, what is our role in using new media, and how far can we be optimistic that it's going to have the impact that we envisage it would. So there are different ways in which either you engage directly on blogs or Facebook and you talk directly to individuals, or this was a campaign conceptualized taking into consideration how we understood the polity to be, how we understood women who wanted to contest elections would necessarily be interested that their profiles are being are accessible to many others, thousands of others maybe. But that there wasn't that link. And I think that's why I found the Kerala study very interesting, because it went that one step before, which means do the people that hear, which is the campaign, to drawing in people, but it needs to have a commitment or an understanding of the people that we have targeted, which is directly targeted, which is the women who were planning to contest elections, hoping to get their names as candidates, that they themselves need to understand why. And if we go in there saying, look, it's there, all you have to do is to go and switch on your computer and press that button, it's not going to work. And so that is undoubtedly this is only a momentary pause in the path of new media, maybe, as it chugs along and brings new people in, which is like the vision that one has, that it's chugging along and you're going to jump in at some point or you're going to get left behind. I don't know what happens to people who get left behind, but certainly in our case it was that there was a disjuncture between envisioning how they would respond and actually the realization that it is not they who are going to be clicking the computer button, but others. So there was a shift to saying, okay, we should then let the political parties know that this blog exists and this information exists, because our intention was that these women must be considered for nomination. Now, we have no idea whether the political parties actually went to our blog, but it is definitely more likely that somebody there, because they are using new media, avenues of new media as well, it is more likely. So we do need to have a discussion with some of the political party people, that leadership that we had links with, to see whether they did. So then we have the so that's a problem that I think we had not envisaged, and we do need to think about. And also, how far can you use it in this way, in this campaign kind of way, effectively? And then we have the other bit of our research, which is on the SMS service from the East. And again, there I think it's a really unique intervention. It's still limited to a number of people that the SMSs are going in English and Tamil, news bits relating to women by women. Now, again, I think that has a lot of potential, because it means you need to go in to talk with people, and the younger generation probably, and this is not only for the younger generation, this is also for working women, to be able to. So the literacy then, how to bridge that, the literacy and the new media, because they can read and write, and they do use mobile phones, and SMSing is very popular. But to develop it into a form of a women's news service means you have to compete with the bigger media giants who already have these kinds of news services. It means you have to get permission probably from the government to be able to, at a low-key level, I think it should be okay. But we can see that there could be, or rather we had to be prepared for the challenges of negotiating for that space, even if it is a little message on SMS. So I'm good to stop now. And would like to end with some of the questions that remain. Yes, I agree with Anita, because it's a structural difference, that changes that are taking place, and we need to engage with it. And I'm very I was very reminded actually of a younger colleague of mine, Windows 7, which I find, and every time I complain, and she would just snap at me and say, either you learn it or you just get left behind. And I said, I'll learn it. And I'm learning it every day, and then it unlearns everything I have learned, because it's something. And that is exactly what it is. Either you get on with familiarizing yourself with new media, or you get left behind. And I think there'll be a lot of people left behind. I don't know what's going to happen to them. Can new media actually bring about gender equality? So then it means that we are not allowing it to sit there, but then we make those interventions. Will access to new media be sufficient as we have it now to empower IT literate community? And what do we mean by empowering? How public is the ICT public space? Because we are now finding that that's the unease, you know. I mean, what Kalyani was saying yesterday about the biometric, I mean, that's the fear that is at the back of everyone's mind. Don't put anything on Facebook. It doesn't belong to you anymore. But we don't know. I mean, so how public is that space? Is this space already being dominated by some and not others? And I think something that Farida raised, and which even the little bit of conversation I had with Urvashi this morning, and then when you look at our own political context, political in the sense not necessarily political parties, but political in the sense of standing up for your rights, how far can social movements, or how far does social movements, what does engaging with new media mean in terms of physical mass and communicating the lazy, who was it who said? The lazy activist. The slacktivist.